Welcome to episode 21 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. My name is Randy Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
Doing well. The Yankee season is officially underway. On Sunday after the game, Aaron Boone said it's right in front of us, which usually signals the start of the Yankee season. So opening day, tough opening day loss for the Yankees on Sunday.
Really, really bad. We are definitely going to get into that. It's really hot out in New York. Somehow the Yankees are ice cold when it's like 200 degrees outside. They look terrible. We are not going to sugarcoat this. I think in this episode, we've been like pretty balanced, I feel like, throughout the year, and kind of had a good read of the temperature of the team and their performance. And right now they are in the dumps. And before we get going, I just want to give a disclaimer to everyone that I'm going to try my best to not turn into like a WFAN caller or someone that has some BS Twitter account with some fake Avi or no Avi that just hops in everybody's mentions to bitch and complain whenever they get a chance. I'm going to try my best to avoid being that person, but there are no guarantees, because as we will get into in a second, this feels like we're moving beyond a rough stretch now. I think we've moved past the rough patch. We've entered the the 2020s Yankees theme of having one bad stretch and then it becoming kind of like a defining moment in your season. So, Chris, what were your initial thoughts with the Yankees Red Sox series this past weekend?
I mean, it was a mixed bag because on one hand, you have Ben Rice hitting three homers on Saturday. Team responded really well after Friday's game. They score 14 runs. Do you think that Friday's game would possibly bleed into Saturday's game just because of like how that game ended? But they responded pretty well. So it's like, okay, like maybe like that is the turning point for the Yankees. They need, a rookie hitting three homers. He gets his curtain call. He doesn't know which steps to go out on. Like, all that was really cool. And then Sunday, they respond with a complete dud, which is equally concerning after what had just transpired 24 hours prior. But I think the biggest takeaway for me in the entire series is how things transpired on Friday night. I thought it was completely embarrassing from the Yankees in basically every facet of the game. They look like a little league team on the base paths. They couldn't catch, Austin Wells threw the ball down Oswaldo Cabrera at second. That ball's got to be caught. But also your catcher has to throw the ball to their teammate's chest. Like, there's no reason that ball is, a foot off the ground. Either way, like, that play should have been made. Luke Weaver has a double play set up, first and second. He's worried about the guy on second base. He fires the ball in the center field. He got out of the jam, so it didn't matter. In the ninth inning, Clay Holmes throws eight straight sinkers to Masataka Yoshida. Yoshida hits a two-run homer. We've been talking about it since April, but the lack of swing and miss really showed itself there. And then in the ninth inning, Trent Grisham watches three fastballs right down the middle. Very bizarre at bat. Extremely bizarre at bat. Like, I don't know what was going on there. In the 10th, Tommy Kahnle throws two straight fastballs. I don't remember the last time he threw two straight fastballs prior to that. He basically only throws changeups, but he decided to throw two straight fastballs. It bites him. And then in the 10th inning, Juan Soto like smokes a ball to the right center gap. Ben Rice doesn't know like which direction he should be running. Aaron Judge and Alex Verdugo swing first pitch at balls out of the zone. Doesn't work out. Oswaldo Cabrera grounds out weakly to first base. And then I thought the answers after Friday's game were embarrassing too, truthfully. It's just very bizarre. Like when we asked Aaron Boone, you know, about DJ LeMahieu hustling, he said he was hustling. And then, you know, maybe 20 seconds prior, he's like, I didn't see the play. So it's like, which one is it? Did you see the play or did you not see the play? And then Anthony Volpe says he thought the ball was foul, even though he was looking at the play the entire time. It's like, what? Like, yeah, what are we doing here? It's like the ball, yeah. Like you're not, baseball players don't throw the ball around the field after a foul ball is called. And the umpire signaled fair ball immediately. So it wasn't like it was like a delayed call by the umpire. Like he called it immediately. And Volpe's still like 40 feet away from home at the point when the umpire signals fair ball. And then Volpe says it was, he thought it was foul. You know, LeMahieu's not available post game to speak with reporters because he's getting treatment. It's like, what are we doing here? Come on. Like,
yeah.
Like where is the accountability? Just like own up to mistakes. Like if people just own up to mistakes in all facets of life, we would be better off. But like the stuff they were spewing after the game, it's like, are we stupid? It's like, what's the point of like talking with them if they're just going to like blatantly say stuff that just makes zero sense? And can be seen as a lie. I'm not saying they're lying, but when you say stuff like that, you're going to open up yourself to the possibility of many people who pay money to see this team going to be like, what? Like they're lying. Because if you watch DJ get down first base on the possible double play ball, and you've watched baseball for even this is your first season watching baseball, it's like, come on, man. Like we can see that he wasn't hustling down first base. And then the next day, you know, Boone doubles down on DJ hustling. He said something about like, I saw like an athlete trying to get in the form of being a runner.
Yeah, running
like,
form.
I've never even heard of, what does that even mean?
Right. It's horrible. Like,
this guy's under contract for 2 years and he's struggling to get in a running form.
Right.
And he's under contract for two more years. So if he's struggling now, what's it going to be in that second year of that contract? It's like, come on, man. Like, just say, can't like, it's just annoying that like sometimes they feel the need that they can't be straight up, even though all of us have eyes and are watching the games. It's very frustrating, especially from a reporter's perspective, because it's like the only thing you can do is quote them and say, this is what they said. I can't say like they thought this, like they said right. This. So I have to say that's what they said.
Right.
Even though it, you know, all of that just didn't make any sense to me or the other reporters in the room.
Well, thankfully in this instance, I'm not a reporter. So I'm one of the people that believe Aaron Boone was blatantly lying. I don't think he's a liar. I don't think that's his character. I think as a human being, he has high character, but in that instance, he was lying. And I feel more than comfortable saying that. And then to double down on it the next day and talk about running form is even more absurd. I mean, you had time to look at the play. You had time to look at LeMahieu, and then that's the response. It's unacceptable. Like, and this goes to the conversation that we had during our live stream on YouTube on Friday. And for those listening, I thought we had a great conversation where we were talking about the importance of culture, not just for the Yankees, but in general. And you made the totally valid point that I also agree with, that this ultimately comes down to production. And while in agreement with that, I think it extends beyond that in terms of performance, how you navigate adversity, and how you can have a consistent level of play that puts you in a position to win every day, which is something that I think they were doing for the majority of the season. Like, we talked about it many times, how in many of these games up until this like real bad rough patch, they've done the things to give themselves an opportunity to win. But now, because they're in a rough patch, they've totally gone away from that, not just like performance wise, but now with effort, now with accountability, all these things that have popped up in the past are popping up again. And we've said for a couple of weeks, you know, it's the ebbs and flows of the season. These things happen. But Friday night, to me, is a turning point. And it's an inflection point for this season and for this team. And quite frankly, for this organization. Like, I don't think that it's too hyperbolic to say that that game is – will be a defining moment one way or the other for this team. They were that bad. They were terrible. And it was both performance, but it was also the other things that we talk about, or I talk about, with culture. And this is also coming off a sweep by a team that isn't good. So you were swept by a bad team at home, and then you're the next day against your rivals with a big crowd. That's the performance that they put out there. And to me, now it's alarming. We've gone past the, this is the ebbs and flows of a season. Now we're in the territory of questioning the character of this team. And I think it's totally valid, because it wasn't just Friday. The game last night, Sunday, we're recording Monday morning, I thought was almost as bad in a different manifestation of the same issue. Carter Crawford is not Greg Maddux. Like, you will never confuse Carter Crawford with Greg Maddux. It is unacceptable for your lineup to let Carter Crawford, who has not pitched well in a while, to carve you up to the tune of 63 pitches in 7 innings. Like, if you want to leave and you don't want to be there, just give the game up and go home. Like, get on the flight to Tampa and just go to Tampa and reset. Use your off day to reset. But those were some of the most ridiculously uncompetitive at-bats that I've seen from this team in a while. Like, all of them. Soto was swinging first pitch. Judge was swinging first pitch. Volpe, you go Verdugo. Like, it was the entire lineup. And I understand that, like, when a guy throws strikes, you don't want to fall behind. But it's not like he has this devastating arsenal either. And it's not like he was overpowering. He only had, like, 3 or 4 strikeouts in 7 innings. So, like, there isn't anything telling you that this guy's just on and you're just not going to have a good night. Like, Carter Crawford wasn't that good. So it's like, what is happening with the approach? What is happening with the effort? And what is happening with, like, the competitive character of the team? Like, that's the thing that's bothering me now. Like, yes, the lineup is short. Yes, there is, like, a talent shortage in certain spots. All those things are true. We've talked about it. But, like, that has nothing to do with DJ LeMahieu not hustling. That has nothing to do with Austin Wells being unable to throw the ball 90 feet to second base, or Ben Rice not knowing where the ball is and you're at second base, or Anthony Volpe not running, or Anthony Volpe not hitting, like, not doing anything. Like, at some point, this becomes a larger issue, and this is where Boone comes in for me. And I've been very good about not really criticizing Boone. We've complimented Boone multiple times this year. But, like, now we're reverting back to the things that were issues before. And I said on the live stream, ever since that 2020 season, whenever there's adversity, this team is ill-equipped to navigate its way out of it. And if I remember correctly, in that 2020 season, they had 2 10-game losing streaks surrounding a 10-game winning streak. And these wild swings on both ends of the spectrum don't make any sense. The Yankees are actually talented, despite what people like to say about them. Like, do they have 9 all-stars in the lineup? Of course not. Nobody does. Everybody has some holes. But this team is talented. They have talent. They have enough talent to not have multiple seasons in a row now where they go 5-15 in a 20 game stretch and look horrific during it. So like, at what point do we start to look at the leadership, whether that's Boone, Cashman, Boone, Howe, whatever? Like, there's a precedent set now. This is a part of who they are. And it's like, why did we get here? How do we get here? And how do you get out of it? Because this is absurd now. And it's like getting worse. Like, it's not getting better. You had that one game where you needed a historical effort to win the game. And then the two games surrounding that, you're not even competing. And it's like, who does this problem lay at their feet? Who is that person or people? And to me, we have to start talking about Boone, especially after these press conferences, because he's, again, like I said before, you don't have to be Bob Knight. You don't have to throw a chair at somebody. You don't have to disrespect anybody. You don't have to cross the line. But like, you are validating these efforts in the post-game press conferences. You're saying it's okay, essentially, and that this is acceptable. This is the standard. It's okay to play this way when we all know it's not. And it's like, something has to change. There has to be a shakeup somewhere with someone somewhere to like get out of this now.
I wanted to go back to your point you made about them having the talent. It's like, you expect these stretches with the White Sox, the Marlins, the Rockies. Like, even if the Yankees aren't 100%, let's say they're 80%, 80% of their actual starters are in. Like, we're still talking about a team that has a $300 million payroll.
Right.
Like, you should not be 5-15 and now 6-16 in your last 22 games. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, these are the guys that you believed in from, you know, the start of the season. So some of this also does come down on Brian Cashman and the roster he assembled.
Yes.
Some of this also comes down to, you know, Aaron Boone not being able to get the most out of his guys. This is the third straight season where they've had a stretch of at least 5-15. Like, that's a trend at this point now. Like, right. This is three straight years. You know, if Boone comes back in next season, you know, you should pencil them down for 5-15 because that is the trend right. That's happening.
Right.
You know, it only happened three times, a 5-15 stretch for the Yankees from 96 to 21. So it's not like this is a reoccurring thing for the Yankees in their franchise's history and recent history. So that is certainly a problem.
And I just want to also add, they're doing this again with a lot of new players. So yeah, like,
right.
There's a consistency here that, you know, you have like a bunch of new starters. You have Juan Soto and this is still happening. So like, who's the common denominator here? Like, you know, it's not hard to kind of start figuring out where this or who this comes back to. And it could be more than one person.
The one point I also wanted to make is, you know, Aaron Boone was the manager when the Yankees were 50-21 this season.
Yeah, he was.
So do you give him credit for the 50-21 start as well? Or because I've seen a lot of, obviously there's a lot of criticism right now of Boone in particular. It's like, I feel like you have to do both. You know, he was the manager for 50-21. And now, you know, he's obviously the manager for the 6-16 stretch that they're on. So I hope that people are also thinking of it that way as well when it comes to the Boone discussion.
We've given him credit. I mean, when it was happening.
I'm not saying we haven't.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, we can only speak for ourselves, and I think we've been fair with Boone. Like, we've pointed out times where, like, he's done a good job during that stretch. But it's like, I will also say that to their credit, a lot of people were saying the other shoe was going to fall at some point, and it looks like they're right. So,
yes,
I mean, yeah, he should get credit, but in fairness to people, they were expecting this, and they're also right at the moment.
I don't know if that's partly because there are a lot of Yankee fans who live to be like, I told you so about the team.
Yeah, that definitely is part of it, for sure.
So it's like, I don't know if they legitimately believe that like this stretch was going to come, even like when the Yankees were 50-21. But yeah, it's a problem. It's frustrating to hear basically everybody in the clubhouse say, we'll just get them tomorrow. Yep. Everything's cool. No panic. We're chilling. It's like that doesn't play for a fan base that wants some fire or some, not finger pointing, but like reasons of like why this has happened for so long now. Like I asked Boone after the game, it's like, this has been going on for a long time now. Like, why do you think this is happening? And Boone's response to me was like, yeah, we've had some like missed opportunities. Like it hasn't really been missed opportunities. They've been getting their asses kicked in a lot of these games during this stretch. Sure. Like there are certainly some missed opportunities in some of these games. No doubt. Some of these games could have gone either way. Friday's game could have gone either way. Like the Red Sox also didn't play crisp baseball. Like either of those teams could have won. So yes, it's like a mixture of missed opportunities, but for the most part, they've been getting their asses kicked in a lot of these games. So there has to be something more than just missed opportunities, but that's what he pointed to. So I definitely get the frustration when fans are watching the post-game press conferences, reading the quotes, hearing what the players say, and Judge's, you know, I don't know if fault is the right word, but he also uses a lot of this language too about like, we'll get him tomorrow. We have a bunch of studs in the locker room. That's his MO. That's what he's been since he's come up. But at some point, like you would like to see something different from him other than the usual.
I want to say something about that because this was kind of like a conversation on Twitter last night. And I agree with you, but I think the Yankees in general have like a leadership void beyond Boone and Judge. There is no Jorge Posada in that clubhouse. There's no Mariano Rivera in that clubhouse. There's no CeCe in that clubhouse. There's no Paul O'Neill in that clubhouse. There's no David Cone in that clubhouse. You know, Derek Jeter gets a lot of credit for being the captain and kind of like being the face of that dynasty, and rightfully so. But there were a lot of leaders in that clubhouse. It wasn't just Derek. You know, like all that responsibility didn't fall on Derek. Like, and I know Jorge had a big part in policing that locker room. And you know better than me because you're there every day, but as someone that watches every day and is like pretty in tune with what's going on, they don't have a Jorge. They don't have one guy that'll get in your face. And it's like, the other thing too is like, the players are, I don't want this to come across as something like we're just dumping on them because they're not playing well, but like it's relevant because these things are popping up with their play. So like, I don't mean for this to be something that is a conversation for the rest of the season, unless it's, is a true total collapse. And I think anything is valid on this topic. But I feel like the team is too deferential to Judge and relies on Judge way too much. Just not just the production, but it's just like, well, if there's something going on with the clubhouse, it's Judge. Like, what is Judge doing? Or is he doing enough? Like, is Judge going to hit 30 home runs in this game to save us? Like, Judge. And it's like, man, he needs help. Like somebody else step up and be a leader. Like somebody else step up and like kind of take control of the locker room along with him. It's just because he's a captain doesn't mean that like it's like some dictatorship in the clubhouse. Like you can contribute to it. Like Derek was the captain for a long time and the de facto captain before he was officially the captain. But there were guys that like policed the locker room and like supported guys, challenged guys, did all those things. And it's like, why does Judge have to do all of this? Like, who's the other guy in that locker room that can contribute to that? And it's just like, I don't know who that person is. Like, Garrett Cole doesn't seem like that guy. I think he's a mentor. Like, I think he helps guys, but we're not talking about like the physical play part. And it's like, Stroman's not that guy. Rodon's not that guy. Somebody needs to help Rodon out. Like, somebody needs to calm Rodon down like every time he's out there. LeMahieu's not that guy. Volpe's not that guy. Like, Glaber's not that guy. Rizzo's kind of that guy, but like, he's like Judge. You know, Soto just got there. Verdugo's barking and like has a 600 OPS. Like, you know, it can't all be judged, in my opinion. Like, that feels like that's just too much. Like, it should be a collective thing where you have a couple people you can turn to help Boone and Judge. You know, it's not all Boone either, but it just seems like they don't have a guy like that.
No, they don't. And that's a good point. You know, ideally you would hope it would be someone like Giancarlo Stanton, but Stanton's a quiet guy.
Right.
You mentioned Stroman and Soto, like they have the personalities for it, but like you said, they just got there. They don't have years long of cachet built up inside the clubhouse. You mentioned Verdugo struggles. Garrett Cole, like you said, he's certainly someone that a lot of the guys lean on, especially the pitchers, of just like helping them out. But he's not a rah-rah guy either. So yeah, they don't have that guy in the clubhouse who, like you mentioned, Posada, Rivera, there isn't any of those guys. But also those guys had a lot of cachet built up over the years.
Sure.
To get to that point. And that's why, like, you would hope that it would be Stanton, but he's a quiet guy. Like, he mostly stays to himself. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough. They definitely lean on Judge a lot, even just in production. Like, I saw a stat, I don't remember if it was like this week or last week, but Yes had a stat where it showed Judge's production in wins and losses. And it's crazy like how stark the differences are. Like, if Judge hits, they basically win. If Judge doesn't hit, they lose. Like, it shouldn't be like that in a sport that really requires all nine guys. Like in the NBA, you have one guy on the court who's your superstar. And if he goes off, like, a lot of the times you win that game. But also, even in games where your superstar doesn't perform well, like, sometimes you have two, three guys on the court, your role players who can get hot from three, and you still can win the game. Like, baseball, you need more than one guy in wins to produce. And, you know, it does feel like in some ways of the 2022 season, when Judge obviously hit 62 home runs, but he was masking a lot of issues that the Yankees lineup had for the majority of that season. Like, it was kind of the same thing of what we're seeing now. If Judge hits, they win. If Judge doesn't produce, they lose. Like, they have to figure that out. Like, that can't continue moving forward.
And it's also bizarre because Juan Soto's having a great year. You know, he's not by himself. Like, they're the best duo in baseball, and it still just comes back to Judge, like, in so many ways. And it's odd. You know, I also will continue to say that the Stanton injury and Stanton's presence is, like, really crucial to this team. I mean, when he's producing at the level that he was producing before he got hurt, it makes a huge difference. Like, it's not really a coincidence that they've lost a bunch of these games with Stanton gone. And I think, especially because they're like really bad against left-handed pitching, and he gets hurt and all of a sudden they're facing all these lefties and he's not there. I mean, I think that's made a huge difference. You know?
Oh, yeah.
They have
Verdugo in their four hole instead of Stanton. But the one thing I would caution with Stanton coming back is – for the past two seasons, right after he got hurt and came back into the lineup in 22, he had under a 700 OPS when he returned from injury. Last year, when he returned in June, he had under a 700 OPS for the rest of the season. So I don't know, you know, again, that's starting to become a trend. This is the third year. So I don't know how much he's going to look like the Stanton from pre-injury when he returns. And it's another lower body injury, and that causes, obviously, any players, especially a hitter who has so much force behind his swings, like that could throw him out of whack for some time. So even though he's going to return soon, possibly as soon as right after the All-Star break, I don't know if they can count on him to produce at similar levels to what he was pre-injury.
Yeah, totally. And that's valid. I also wish that he would go on a rehab assignment, because part of it is he's playing catch up without seeing any at bats, and he's doing it at the major league level in the middle of the season. So I understand why he wouldn't want to, but it feels like you should probably go on a rehab assignment so you can get these like rusty at bats out of the way, get some timing, and give yourself a better chance to hit the ground running when you're there. And I think that that's like a big part of it. He's basically on a rehab assignment with the major league club, you know, and that's also a trend. And it's like, you know, I understand you want to get there and help the team, but help the team when you could be at your best, or giving yourself a chance to be at the best. So, I know it's not going to happen.
I think he had one rehab game last year, and then he came back like the following day for the Dodgers series. And then when Judge gets hurt, it's like, oh, damn. Like, now we have to rely on Stanton to carry the team for these 2 months that Judge is out. So, yeah, your point is certainly a good one. I just don't see Stanton spending
a
week or two in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
No, hell no. Yeah, like that's like wishful thinking on my part. But I think that that just contributes to him like not performing as well. Like he's basically not giving himself a chance to hit the ground running. So,
but even even when he builds up the at bats, you know, you would hope that after like 2 weeks or so seeing pitches, like you start to return to form. And in the past 2 years, that hasn't happened. Last year, he got hot, I think, in like the final week or 2 weeks of the season. And, you know, he performed well in the playoffs. But there was 3 months of just like, ugh, like stands up, like he's going to get out.
Right.
And like they can't afford that right now with Stan. No. Like they need him to. And it's a tough spot for him and the Yankees to be in, to rely on someone who obviously has such a unique swing. And now he's coming back from another lower body injury. So I'd be cautious with that one.
Do the minor leagues go on All-Star break when the majors go on All-Star break? Like, is this like everybody off at the same time?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I mean, if the plan is to have him come back after the All-Star break and, you know, the minors are still playing, that I don't know off the top of my head either, but maybe because they have the Futures game, they have a pause. But if not, I mean, that seems like the perfect time to tell him, hey, man, like at least go to Tampa or go down with us, stay in Tampa and like have some at-bats with these guys. And then we'll see you, against Tampa, I think, out of the break. You know, it's just I don't know. Whatever.
I just looked. They have the same All-Star break.
Oh, okay. All right. So there goes that idea. All right. So we're gonna do something a little different. We have a bunch of mailbag questions that cover a lot of topics. So we're gonna go to this break and spend the rest of the episode answering your mailbag questions. So we'll be back right after this break. And we're back. It's early mailbag time. We're just going to jump right into it because all of you have great questions, valid questions. So we're just going to try to get through all of them. I think there's some obviously more the subjects are going to some of the things that we talked about, but I think it gives us a chance to, you know, hit it from different angles. So we will try our best to not be redundant here, but the questions are valid. So we'll start with Andrew Tweedy. The subject, no dogs to be found. I don't want to make sure. I want to make sure Tim doesn't hear that. He might be offended. Hey, guys. I just read Chris's piece from last night, properly eviscerating the team's performance. That was brutal. Their issues on the field are well documented at this point. So what I'm left wondering about is what's going on in the clubhouse at this point. At the beginning of the season, this year's version of the Yankees seemed to represent a massive shift in the clubhouse culture from years past. Soto, Verdugo, Stroman, all the barking and shit. Hell, even Boone seemed to be managing differently. There's been a newfound intensity until this awful stretch started a few weeks ago. No hustle, no intensity. That Stroman-Glaber incident summed it up pretty well. So, Chris, what's the clubhouse like these days from your perspective? Are they just giving the media lip service with all these BS quotes, but behind closed doors there's actually more intensity and accountability? And where's judging all this? Where do y'all see his responsibility as captain to shift the energy?
I know, like, some teams, like, have players-only meetings. You know, this is my second year on the beat. I don't think they've had one players-only meeting since I've been here. I don't think they do that. I think they operate in what I was saying before. Like, we'll get them tomorrow. It's just a blip on the radar. 162 games, yada, yada. Like, I think that's how they operate for the most part. Is it lip service? I don't know. I do think, like, deep down they believe what they're saying. Like, you know, you can read people and all that. Like, I've been a sports reporter for 10 years now. Like, I know when, for the most part, when people are bullshitting. I don't think it's bullshit with them. I think they believe that. I think they believe that, you know, we're the Yankees. We're a really good team. We can beat anybody on any day. But they also think that because of how baseball is with the calendar of 162 games, I do think, like, they believe that any other team can beat them on a given day. Like, I don't think they have that, like, killer mindset of, like, oh, like, let me lick my lips. The Cincinnati Reds are coming to town.
Yep.
And they're under 500. Like, that's just how it is. So it obviously, like, needs to change moving forward. I just don't know how it changes, like, in the middle of a season.
Yeah, I think something you said is, like, a crucial piece in this, and it's the we're not looking at these teams as food when they come in here. Like, Cincinnati Reds should have been food. Like, they should have crushed those guys.
And it's a series to get them out of their rut.
Right. And the Cincinnati Reds are not good. And I'm not sure they always had that killer instinct. I think they obviously were playing well. I think that, you know, they kept themselves in games. But I don't think anybody could say with any kind of conviction that they exhibited, like, a killer instinct. Like, we're going to show up and we're going to destroy you. And then we're going to go home and come back tomorrow and do the same thing. Like, I don't think they gave off those vibes. Like, the Jeter teams for a long time, whether it was 98 or not, they had that vibe. It was like, and they could validate saying we're the Yankees. This team, the we're the Yankees thing, needs to get out the window. It needs to get out of here. Like, nobody cares anymore. You're another team, to be quite honest. And you're only the Yankees because of, like, your predecessors.
Right, the You're mystique. Not the, they right. have this team has no mystique. No they've mystique. Accomplished. They've accomplished zero.
No, and their rivals, like the Astros, are the team that could say we're the Astros.
I was just about to say, if the Astros wanted to say we're the Astros, like, that probably has some power behind it. Like, as yeah. like I was saying on the live stream, it's like, if the Astros get in the playoffs, like, the Astros, even though they haven't played well, they've had a lot of injuries, but if they get into October, like, they can say we're the Astros, and we expect to beat every one of these MFs.
Yeah. Like, the Orioles can't say it because, I mean, they haven't won since 83 or whatever it was. The Yankees can't say it now because they don't do it anymore. There's nobody that can say that besides the Astros. So, like, the whole, like, we're the Yankees and it's the pinstripes. Like, that got it. That has to go. We're not there with you guys right now. You guys haven't won anything. So, like, just showing up with the pinstripes isn't enough. Like, you have to earn that. And then you have to maintain it. And this team, under Boone, with Judge, they haven't done that. Like, so that needs to go. So, like, the desperation and the urgency has to come back, and it has to be there every day. Like, that was the thing about that 96 team that I remember vividly. And, like, I was where a lot of Yankees fans are now with that 96 team that was like, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe if they keep going, like, maybe. But, like, looking back on it, that team was, like, determined every single day. Whether they won or lost, they were like, yo, man, we're going to show up and we're going to compete, and you're going to have to beat us. Like, the only way we're losing this is if you actually beat us. That was that attitude from the beginning of that season to the end. And it culminated, obviously, with a championship. Even when they went down to Atlanta, like, they still were like, you know, this is tough, but you're going to have to beat us to win this series. We're not handing it to you. And there's too many times now where it's just like, we're playing the Reds. Okay. You know, we got swept by the Reds. I'm not going to run hard to first base against the Red Sox. Or I'm not going to track the ball off of Juan Soto's bat. Or I'm the thing with Volpe. I don't even know how to describe that. That was awful. So that we're the Yankees thing needs to get out of here. Like, enough. Like, somebody get some. Also, like, you can create some urgency in the play. Like, do a hit and run. Like, try to steal a base. Do something. Like,
yeah, I mean, they're slow. Like, they haven't stolen a base in like 2 or 3 weeks, I think, now.
But you don't need to be fast to do a hit and run.
No, you don't.
Like, do something. I'm just like throwing things out there. But like, you can create urgency.
And to that point, when they were in Toronto, you saw Judge and Soto do something similar on the play that just happened on Friday with DJ and Volpe.
Right.
Ball was hit in front of Judge. Judge gets into a rundown, and Soto comes motoring home. And Soto's not the fastest guy, but
right,
he manufactured a run, and Judge helped. It's right. Like, those are the two guys who are doing everything. You need somebody to pick it up too. It's like, yeah. DJ and Volpe, like, especially with the seasons they're having, it's like they need to be running hard. Like, that's just simple stuff,
right?
Especially like when you're not playing well, like all that stuff becomes louder noise, and it forces them to have to answer questions they obviously don't want to be asked. But if you open yourself up to that, then that's the shit that comes with it.
Yeah, you don't need to be a mega athlete to like have urgency. I mean, and Volpe's fast. So, like, why wasn't he running? You know, like, you can make things happen. I mean, look at the Red Sox. They discovered mid-season that they were the go-go Red Sox, or whatever Alex Cora said. They weren't doing that at the beginning of the season. Like, they were trying to, like, have Tyler O'Neill and Devers, like, match the ball. And then they figured something out after they were playing crappy. Now they have a totally different identity. And they leaned into Duran and these other random guys. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I know that they're more athletic on the whole because they kind of have to be since they got rid of a bunch of guys. But, like, you can create urgency to make things happen. You don't have to be, like, you know, a mega athlete to make that happen in some instances. Zach Rowley, subject, hope. When do we give up hope? Wow. We're at that stage. This is the same team we've seen for the last 5 years, it seems. When can I stop watching and putting my heart into this without feeling bad? Or do they make changes before then? I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, you watch when you want, or you don't have to watch. I mean, and I'm not saying that derisively. I don't, that's your choice. I don't know what that line is for you. I think it's different for everyone. The team is in a playoff spot. The team, for the majority of the season, has played well. I mean, we can't forget what happened before this. Like, this could be a defining stretch for them, or they could do something to not get out of it. Me, personally, I always have hope because this isn't that serious to me in my life. So, like, I don't think it costs any more to have hope. you know, like, I understand a lot of people put a lot of their emotional bank into sports and professional sports. And, you know, some people, not literally, but figuratively, are like life and death with it. I'm not like that anymore. So to me, it's like, I'm always going to have hope just because this isn't like my identity. I mean, I love it. I love it to death, but I know this isn't really going to impact me. And I've said before, when you win a championship, it's great in the moment. Then all of a sudden the feeling goes away. It's not that you walk home with like a ring or something. You don't get that much out of it. You probably end up spending more money than you would if they don't win. So to me, you should always have hope because, you know, life goes on. There's other things going on. And I know that it's an escape for people. Like, I understand that that's important, but if it's an escape, I think you should always rely and believe that something good can happen, whether even when times are bad. And I feel like that's true for life. You know, so my life philosophy applies to this as well. So me personally, I would keep the faith until the season's over and they don't have a championship. That's me. But, you know, I can't dictate to somebody what they should feel or how they should feel.
So the one thing I'll just quickly add to this point is, when you look around Major League Baseball, there's only like five or six really good teams who probably have a chance to win a World Series. And the Yankees are one of those five or six teams. Like, even still, like, yep, even throughout the stretch, like, they are still one of the five or six teams who could win it all. So if that doesn't provide hope, I don't know if anything will, because like, there aren't many good teams this year. There just aren't. There's a lot of meh. Like, look at the National League standings. There's only like two teams who are out of contention, and all the others are still in the mix for a third wild card spot. And a lot of those teams stink. And yet they're still in the mix because, right, there's just a lot of meh teams. So the Yankees aren't meh. Like, yes, they're playing like shit right now, but I still believe that they are one of the five or six teams who could win in October. Again, like I've said previously, would I be betting on them to win right now? No. Would they be my top two? No. But they are one of the teams that could win. Like, they should be given the right to see what they do at the trade deadline. Now, if they sit out the trade deadline like they did last year, then all right, like, the hope starts to dwindle a little bit. But
right,
as of right now, as of July 8th, they are one of the five or six teams that can win the title.
Right. I agree. Keep watching. Keep the faith. It doesn't hurt, in my opinion. Hector Leon, following up basically on the conversation that we just had, do you really think this team, as presently construction, can make any noise in October if they make the playoffs? I think they're going to make the playoffs. I get that they're missing Stanton, but they're getting punked by teams with way less talent, and Boone's decision-making is something. Thank you. Love your podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could certainly make noise in October. As I just said, like, they still have Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. Like, if those guys go off, you're in good shape. But obviously they need other things to go their way. Like, during the stretch since June 13th, they have four guys in the lineup who have a 65 WRC plus or lower. That's Glaber, that's Verdugo, that's LeMahieu, and that's Volpe. That's 4/9 of your lineup is just playing like garbage at the plate. So it's hard to win. And also, your starting pitchers during this stretch have also been garbage for the most part. Like, right, Carlos has the worst ERA since June 13th. Coming into last night, Heel had the third worst ERA since June 13th. Gerrit Cole has a 6.75 ERA. Marcus Stroman has a 6.43 ERA. You know how hard it is to win games when both your lineup is playing terribly and then your pitchers can't get anyone out? You're going to lose a lot of games. So that's what we've seen so far. But also, like, these guys that we're mentioning do have the ability to break out. It's just a matter of, one, when they will break out, or two, can they actually break out at this point? For some of those guys, it's like there's varying levels of confidence in their ability to turn their seasons around.
I will say to bring something positive, I thought Hill's performance was really encouraging.
Oh, it was great. He looked really great.
He looked really good. So I think you can hang your hat on that and feel confident that this really isn't like a physical issue. It really could have just been a mechanical thing. And it seems he had figured something out. His slider was fantastic. His changeup had a lot of movement. His fastball was much better. I thought he was really good. I thought the decision to keep him in against Devers was not a good one. I didn't think it was a good one. I don't even think he should have pitched the seventh. I don't think he should have even faced O'Neill. But, you know, things happen and they didn't score any runs, so ultimately it didn't matter. But I thought Hill's start was encouraging. Cole needs to figure something out. I'm not worried about Gerrit Cole, but I think after the All-Star break, we'll probably see like the real Cole. That's my hope. You know, he can probably break down his starts and recalibrate and figure out like what he needs to do. And I think he'll be very wise with his time off and like figure things out. So, I mean, there are places where you can expect better performance. I think Hill pitching well is like a really good sign. I think Cole will be fine. Stroman and Rodon, I'm not sure because their metrics have kind of told us that they weren't pitching as well, even when they were going well. I think we have a question about LeMahieu. I think LeMahieu's done. Like he shouldn't be playing. Like, and I know that they don't really have anybody right now, but he's killing that team. Like he's killing that team. I feel bad saying that because I've been a LeMahieu fan since he's been here, but he's been horrific. It's not working.
No, it's not. And he's apparently struggling to get into runner form.
Yeah, he can't. Yeah, right. Exactly. So if you literally cannot run out of the box, you probably shouldn't be playing. that's probably not a good sign. All right. Hal Gordon. Hello, Chris and Randy. I understand that it's probably a hard subject to expand, but I found the brief team identity discussion during the last live stream very interesting. Here we are, a third season in a row where they have a 5-15, 20-game stretch, a blip in the context of 162 games, and yet its issues, whether it be pitching or, more importantly, in my opinion, terrible hitting approach, seem to be A, the key reason for their postseason failures, or B, continue afterwards to end the regular season despite wins to salvage a winning record. Injuries are an important part of these losing stretches in terms of context, and yet to me it doesn't matter because we are seeing it for a third season in a row despite the talent this team continues to boast. I don't want to ask the basic WFAN question of is it the players, manager, GM, but how can you not think about it? Is this just the identity of the franchise now? Constantly succumbing to pressure so much that it somehow permeates from the players to the front office and vice versa. Sorry for the long rant question. Love the podcast and hope it continues for seasons to come. Thank you, Hal.
Thank you. I mean, I think it's a combination of everything.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a cop-out answer, but I think everybody is to blame for some of this. Whether you want to blame Boone more than the players or Cashman more than Boone or Boone more than Cashman. Like I do think that like everybody, when a team is struggling this poorly, everybody is at fault. Everyone from Brian Cashman to how he assembled the roster, the depth of the lineup, whatever. Boone with not maximizing the daily stuff out of his players who are in the lineup, who are still talented, by the way, and are still making a lot of money. So like they should be performing, and also the players for not performing up to the expectations they have. Like it's a combination of everybody involved in the decision-making with the Yankees as to why they are struggling right now.
Yeah, and I'll just add, I don't know what their identity is. I mean, I said this on a live stream. I couldn't tell you what it is other than we're the Yankees.
That is the identity.
Yeah, and it's like you just like said, they don't, who cares?
They don't – like the Red Sox identity is pretty clear. They're athletic. They're going to use their speed to create stuff. They're going to pitch well, and they're going to try and win games that way. With the Yankees, right. It's like – it seems like they want to be a home run hitting team, but they don't have – a lot of home run hitters, like they talk about wanting to do that. They also talk about like how they want the lineup to be balanced, but like that doesn't matter if like your righty or lefty can't hit, like that it's pointless. They can't run. Like they, at least on paper, should be able to pitch well, but they haven't. So yeah, I don't, if you ask me to like write a story on what the team's identity is like today, like I would have a problem figuring out which direction to go.
Right. And it feels like they also go away from profiles too much. Like they strongly believed in power bullpens, and now it's all like sinkers and contact and like involve the defense because they also wanted to improve their defense. And it's like, I get it. It's totally logical, but the bullpen was successful with the power game. Like that's where modern day baseball has gone, and they've kind of gone away from that, and it's not working, you know? So it's like, even the profiles change from year to year. And like, there was clearly a push for more contact on the offensive side. And it's like, I get it in theory, but that's not what's going to help you score runs. Like the whole point of this is to score runs. And the way that things are going now, the best way to score runs is with power. It's a power game. And it's just like,
I wanted to add to that. And it's weird. Like you brought that up, and a lot of these guys change their approach, completely change their approach. Like Volpe had a power approach last year, and now it's different. Now Volpe is one of the toughest interviews to get because he doesn't say anything. And I do think that he is somewhat afraid of the media. But I would love to like sit down with him and ask like, what made you change your approach to become this slap hitter? Like it doesn't work in 2024 unless you have amazing and elite contact skills. Like Luis Arraez has, or right. Stephen Kwan has. Like those guys can get their barrel through the zone and basically place the ball where they want it to go. And even still, like in Arraez's case in particular, like there's only so much value you can get out of hitting singles. And for the most part, I would say it's not worth it to have that approach.
Right.
But something caused Volpe, whether it's the team, whether it's him, whether it's his personal hitting coach, whoever told him that you shouldn't be hitting home runs anymore. Like you should be hitting the ball to right field and trying to find grass. Like that's just not a good strategy. Oswaldo Cabrera is kind of the same way. Like he was someone who hit homers in the minors and had the ability to pull the ball in the air. And he told me in a story earlier this season when he was watching Soto, he was like, I shouldn't be hitting home runs. And it's like, yes, you should be hitting home runs. Actually, right. You should be hitting home runs. Like it's cool that like, you know, Soto influenced you in some ways, but like you should still be trying to hit the ball in the air and over the fence. And Glaber's the same way. Like Glaber has become more contact oriented. And I don't understand like why a lot of these guys change their approaches to become more contact oriented, and then they traded for a contact oriented bat in Verdugo too,
right?
So it's like you have a lot of like contact in your lineup, and a lot of the times like that doesn't work because stringing together hits in 2024 with pitching the way it is, it's hard to win games if you're not homering often and frequently.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Red Sox series. They lost because of home runs. Yoshida hit the home run, and then there was a two-run home run in the 10th. They won the game on Saturday because Ben Rice hit three home runs, and two of them were three-run home runs. And they lost last night, Sunday, because they gave up home runs. I mean, that's the difference. And they're giving up home runs to a team that does not have power. You know, like, the Red Sox are not some super slug team outside of Devers and maybe one or two other people. So it's like you lost these games because of slug, and you had multiple opportunities to score runs and have big innings. Nobody hit a home run on Friday and Sunday, and you lose the game. I mean, that's the game. It's a power game. Like, you know, I understand that there's some allegiance and romanticism with how the game used to be, but it's not like that anymore. Like, even when we talk about having some urgency on a base pass, like, ultimately you still need to hit home runs. That's how you're going to win the game. I mean, the Red Sox series is a perfect example of that. The Red Sox won because they outslugged the Yankees. And it's like, you got to get back to that and stop searching for a profile that doesn't make sense for the Yankees. You know, like, if you're doing the whole "we're the Yankees" thing, then, you know, stack your lineup with guys that are going to hit the crap out of the ball. And the guys that you do have that are capable of it, tell them it's okay to, like, hit the crap out of the ball. Like, it can't just be three guys just because they're big old strong guys. But you have more guys that can do that are capable of doing it. So lean into it. I mean, we've talked about that before when the offense wasn't, like, going great, especially at the early parts of the season. They weren't slugging. They slugged, and they were beating everybody. Now it's inconsistent, and now they're struggling again. So
it seems like the Yankees got scared of striking out.
Maybe
just like coming into this year, it's like, yeah, strikeouts are fine, especially like with as slow of this team is. Like, would you rather, all right, one out, runner on first, DJ LeMahieu's up, and he hits a ball to third baseman, 5-4-3 double play. Would you rather that or a strikeout? Like, strikeouts are fine. Like, it doesn't mean you're a bad team if you strike out a lot. And I think that's part of the reason why the Guardians are playing as well as they have. They were a team that prioritized contact. Now, coming into this year, they're striking out more, and they're hitting the ball hard and in the air, and they're winning a lot of games. Like, it's okay to strike out. For whatever reason, like, it seems like the Yankees got scared of the strikeout. They have the let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They have the 8th best strikeout rate in the majors. It's like, who cares?
Right.
Like, who cares? Like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, hit the ball hard and sacrifice contact for hitting the ball over the fence.
Right. Or at least driving it into the gaps, like, just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, just drive the ball.
Just drive the ball.
Stop trying to find grass.
Right.
Like, it doesn't work.
Right. All right, we're going to continue with the mailbag right after this break. And we're back. Let's jump right back into the mailbag. Nathan J. Woodcock, Randy, Chris, hope you had a good weekend. Thanks for taking my email. My weekend was pretty good. First, I like to pride myself as a pretty rational person, and I try not to get reactionary. Obviously, the Yankees gave themselves a huge cushion with their hot start, but it is slowly dissolving. 12-18 over their last 30, 5-15 over the last 20, haven't won a series since KC, and haven't won consecutive games since June 12th. That's ridiculous. Outside of Judge and Soto, this lineup is full of guys with hitting in the low 200s with 600 OPSs. I generally don't see how this gets turned around without some pretty large-scale changes. I recognize this is a very bad stretch, but if a team gets Soto and Judge out, they have no chance. I think the starters will start getting some better results and bounce back after a rocky month. But as the Red Sox just displayed, if you get Soto and Judge out, without a three-homer day from Ben Rice, this team has no chance of going on any deep run. I just want to hear your thoughts, but I'm starting to feel like we could be witnessing a team that could be in third place in a couple weeks. I hope in October I'm looking back on this email and laughing. So this goes back to what we were talking about before the break. They have more than enough talent to support Judge and Soto. They need to start driving the ball. I mean, like, you can't have wholesale changes and expect them to change the entire team. One, you're not going to make that many moves. And two, ultimately, your core is your core. So every team has to rely on their core. You're just bringing in pieces to add to it. So whoever's in that building needs to perform better. And a lot of that just comes down to hitting the ball hard and driving it. Like, they're just not doing that right now for whatever reason. Maybe it's the way they're being pitched. Maybe it's like an approach thing. Whatever it is, it's not happening, and it's not happening with enough consistency. But they have the guys that can do it. We mentioned Volpe. Gleyber can do it. Verdugo can do it. Stanton will be back. Like, you have Ben Rice, but I think there are people there that can support Judge and Soto. They're just not doing it right now. And as far as like them being in third place, maybe. I mean, I the Red Sox are okay. Like, I think they pitch well and they have a couple good players and they found their identity. But like, unless they really add players, I think they are who they are. And I think they're playing good baseball right now. And I think that this stretch would have to really get bad for them to end, for the Yankees to end up in third place. And it could happen because they're playing bad and it's extended now. But I mean, the Red Sox weren't that impressive this weekend. I mean, they only scored one run until the Yoshida home run. It was zip zip last night until they pitched to Devers, which didn't make any sense. And the game before that, they got crushed. So I think Boston's a good team, but me personally, like, the Yankees would really have to fall off a cliff for them to be in third place, like, in the next couple weeks. And maybe that will happen. Maybe this is like who they're going to be the rest of the year, but they were also like crushing everybody for the majority of the season. And I think that still has some value.
I certainly agree. I wouldn't expect them to fall to third place, even with them struggling the way they are. I mean, this is a big week for them. They have three in Tampa and then three this weekend against Baltimore. So, you know, very important games. It wouldn't be a shock to see them limp into the All-Star break and they lose, you know, four of their next six games against these two teams. Like, it wouldn't be surprising. It wouldn't be surprising to see them go 1-5, truthfully. Right. But they also, like you said, they do have the talent to end this week 4-2 or 5-1. Like, they have the talent. It's just, can they actually put it together for multiple days in a row like they were doing in the first half of the season? I would say that falling to third place would be surprising to me. But with the way that they've been playing lately, I guess it's not like out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would have, if they fall into third place, it's because they fell off a cliff, not because Boston is like some great team, in my opinion. I don't think that Boston team is that good. I think they're playing well, but I think they have a very clear ceiling that eventually at some point, unless they make a bunch of moves, like it'll reveal itself. And I could be wrong, but that's how I feel today on July 8th about Boston. Derek Albin, one of the OGs of the Views from 314 Feet blog, one of the co-founders. Shout out to Derek. Hope you're well. Hi, guys. In your opinion, how bad would it have to get for the Yankees to let Boone go midseason? Does his contract status, I think a club option for 2025, but not positive, affect the decision in any way?
Yeah, he does have a club option for next season. I mean, my answer to this would be they didn't fire him in last season when the team was really bad. The team was bad, and they let him continue coaching. So I would be stunned if they let him go during the year, especially they're 18 games over 500. Obviously, again, they're not playing well right now. But it seems like the Yankees – well, not seems, they do operate of letting the coaches finish the season without any change. Like last year, or was it last year? Yeah, last year they fired Dylan Lawson in the middle of the season, and it was the first midseason coaching change since Brian Cashman became general manager. So if we're going off of 2+ decades worth of information, and granted, the Yankees were good during a lot of those years. But if we're going off of that, it would be a complete shock and out of nowhere if Boone was let go during the season. And they can also just have a clean break from him if they want it after October.
I think that they would have to have a total and utter collapse with their guys healthy for him to be fired before the end of the year. I mean, I think.
And I'm talking like 20+ games under .500.
Yeah,
like
it has
to be it would have to be extreme.
Yeah, like they would basically not have to win for the next month and a half. And then like something crazy like that for them to fire Boone. I don't think Boone's going anywhere, which is why I don't really get into the fire Boone conversation. I don't think he's going anywhere. Again, at least for this year.
Yeah. And like, if they wanted to, and if this season, you know, turns out to be a dud, like they have a very obvious way of breaking cleanly from Boone at the end of the season, because they just simply don't have to pick up his option for 2025.
Yeah. I mean,
and then they can start their managerial search in the off season.
And with that said, I mean, Boone needs to perform better, whether he's here or not. I mean, I don't think he's getting fired, but he needs to change something up. It's not working. The whole "it's right in front of us" thing is tired and dead and should be buried. Brian Lomax, what now? Good evening, Randy and Chris. First time, long time. Appreciate the podcast and your perspective, especially as someone who follows a team daily, but recognizes that you cannot live and die with a team on a daily basis and have it good for you mentally, spiritually, or physically. I totally agree. I'm sitting here after another series loss. Swoons happen, bad baseball happens. Sometimes it happens for a while. I can't help but wonder if there's more to it than the Yankees just having a number of players who are either past their best or simply limited despite being at peak age ability. I watch Aaron Boone's day-to-day, and while I understand how difficult it is to manage in New York, let alone play, I can't help but wonder if his relentless optimism and protective nature concerning the players has fundamentally altered the culture of this team in a way that is now irreversible. I'm not one of those dudes who needs the manager to yell at players or anything like that, but it feels like Boone himself has to do something different, and maybe does behind closed doors, I don't know. But I think something about his approach publicly needs to change. Telling us it's right in front of them in the midst of a third straight season where the season starts going the wrong way just feels like asking us to ignore what's actually right in front of us. I don't expect Boone to be fired. I don't expect anyone to be fired, but I do wonder if there's now lack of accountability within the team and organization as a whole that has tainted this group of players with no solution currently existing as things stand. I hope I'm wrong, because that's a terrible place to be. Thoughts. Appreciate you both, and keep this going. A great listen for us fans. Thank you, Brian.
I heard before the season began, I was talking with someone, and they said in all of Boone's years that he's only reamed out, like chewed out a player, like you can count it on your hands. Like that's just not how he operates, even behind closed doors. He'll get on guys, but, you know, chew out and, you know, basically curse out, it's only happened a few times. It's happened recently. I won't name the player. I know the player. But it hasn't happened often because, again, like that's just how he operates. He's been in baseball basically since he was a baby. So I think he believes that baseball, what comes with it, are a lot of ebbs and flows. Now, whether that's a good or wrong way to think when you're a manager, especially in this media market with a fan base that expects a lot, I don't know if that plays well. Like maybe that plays well in Kansas City, but in New York, like it's different. So I wouldn't expect Boone to change his ways when he's been doing this and he has seen from his father managing. Like, that's just how he is. I don't think he's going to change, especially in the middle of the season.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to change either, and I think it hurts the team, to be quite honest. And again, this might be recency bias, but I don't think it is because this has happened since Boone has been here. The press conferences, the post-game press conferences over the last 3 days have bothered me. And I thought about this last night. Much to the surprise of people that don't actually live in New York City and don't actually know the identity of this city, this is a blue-collar town. Like, there are a lot of people that work municipal jobs, they have blue-collar jobs, sanitation workers, subway conductors, bus drivers, teachers, carpenters, construction workers. There are a lot of people that have blue-collar jobs in New York City. This is not like, I know that the whole like coastal elite thing is a term that's often used in politics, but that's not actually accurate for New York City. And yes, there are other like industries here that are white collar and obviously that drives a lot. But at its core, for a lot of New Yorkers and most native New Yorkers, even like transplants, know a bunch of people that work blue collar jobs. So like with that identity, there is a demand for hard work because that's what people do every single day here. And there's accountability because your job here in a blue collar town has accountability. If you don't do X, Y, and Z, they will fire you. Like there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They will find somebody else to replace you. That drives and informs a lot of the way fans here view their sports teams, because it's a reflection of how their everyday lives go. And again, being a blue-collar town has a lot of value here, as it should. That's what basically makes the city run. Like even the food service industry, that's a blue-collar job, unless you're the guy or woman who owns the restaurant or the bar. That's a blue-collar job. A delivery guy, that's a blue-collar job. So like to constantly not be in line with that attitude as the manager of the Yankees is frustrating to me. The LeMahieu explanations are offensive. Like, I've been trying to like be calm about it, but like, it's offensive. You cannot tell New York Yankees fans, or for that matter, if he was a manager of the Mets, you can't tell Mets fans that the player wasn't hustling when, as you said earlier, Chris, we can see it. And then you certainly can't double down the next day and say, it's about poor running form or trying to get in a good running form. People aren't going to buy it. And like, I understand his upbringing. He's like a part of like a big time baseball family, but as an adult and as a manager and as a leader, you have to be in tune with the area that you're in. You have to be like conscious of that. Even if you don't believe in reaming somebody out publicly, that is fine. Nobody is demanding that you do that and to step out of character. But the thing you cannot do is act as if the things that we just watched didn't exist, especially when it comes to effort in New York City. People will see through that immediately and they will not appreciate you and they will not give you the benefit of the doubt with your approach because you are BSing them. You're lying to them. And you're lying to them about things that matter to them in their daily lives. You know, it's not just like being a fan, but it's like, I just worked all day. You know, I just busted my butt. I could be a construction worker. It's 90 degrees and I'm working on this building with like no shade and like a couple breaks. And my escape is watching the Yankees. And then you're not even running a first base. And then the guy who runs the team is telling me, nah, he was running the first base. It's like you're gaslighting us. And I just busted my ass. I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to be in this hot ass sun to build this building for somebody. I'm not even going to live in this building. And then I got to watch Aaron Boone tell me that this guy can't run 90 feet to first base. And I'm like, I'm knocked down 8 bottles of water because I'm like dehydrated being out in this space building this building with some concrete. Like, come on, man. You got to like read the room. Read the city, represent the city that you have that on your chest and on your hat. You know what I mean? Like that's the problem to me, that like you're not reading the room. And sometimes you have to, even if you don't believe it, play the game. Because you're just inviting more questions. You're just inviting more scrutiny. There's more people calling for your head. And that's probably not fair in the grand scheme of things for how your team is played. But when you sit there and just totally misrepresent the thing that all of us saw, you don't need to have baseball acumen to tell if somebody's running hard, like if there's effort. It just puts you in a bad space. And then it calls for people to you for you to do things that you naturally don't think you should do. And it's insulting. And it's like offensive when that happens, when really part of your job is to like foster, not unity, but like foster a togetherness where like everybody feels like you're on the same page, not just your players and the organization, but the fans and the media. I don't think the media, most people, especially like modern day media, want to go out of their way to like trash you. Like, I think that that might have been a thing in the past when there were like real tabloid wars. But now people like yourself just want to report what's going on, have good stories, good or bad, but be fair. Like, you're insulting everybody. You're insulting the media. You're insulting the public. And you're insulting your players. Like, these are the man who knows he didn't run the first base. He knows that. Like, if you asked him, he'd be like, yeah, I didn't do it. Not a good look, but I didn't, you know. Yeah, in all fairness, I didn't do it. And it's just like, just read the room. Sometimes you have to play the game. Like, we don't want to play the game regardless of what it is, but you have to get beyond like that, like very, very narrow-minded tunnel vision approach on how to do things. You're in New York City. You played here. Like, you were with a dynasty team. You know how things go. And it's like, that's the thing that bothers me. Like, identity, accountability, all that stuff, okay. But, like, at his core, you have to, like, represent this city well. And there are just times where I don't think he does that, and there's, like, part of the disconnect for me.
That was a really excellent way of just describing the city and what a lot of fans probably expect. Like, New Yorkers at their core are hustlers.
Yes. Yes.
You got to hustle to make it in the city. You don't hustle, you're going to be gone. The city's going to chew you up and spit you out. So when the New York Yankees can't even hustle to first base, that's why it upsets a lot of people here. Because for the most part, the majority of the people are hustlers. They got to hustle in their day-to-day lives. A lot of these people are living check to check because of how expensive it is here. And they got to hustle. They got to have extra jobs to put food on the table. And when you see someone who's making $15 million a year struggle to get into running form, it's going to upset a lot of people. That's just how it is. And that's what I was saying, you know, in the first couple of minutes of this episode. It's like, if they just said it's unacceptable, it won't happen again, DJ realizes his mistake, it would go a long way. But instead, you're doubling down on this. And that's when, you know, people are going to be like, all right, this is ridiculous and this is bullshit. And now I have an issue. Just like, even if you don't believe it, even if Boone believes that he was hustling, just saying it was unacceptable would go a long way.
Yeah, and then you can have a conversation with LeMahieu and be like, look, man, like, I got to say these things because this is how it works here. And LeMahieu would understand, and then you could have your conversation with him and you move on. But, like, come on, man. Like, come on. It's ridiculous. All right, last question from Ray Marcano. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. I apologize if I didn't. If this team craters and sneaks into the third wild card or doesn't make the playoffs at all, will that give Hal an excuse to not sign Soto? We didn't win, so why invest the money? Interesting question.
It is interesting, but, like, again, I don't think they're falling out that far. Like, they would have to have a pretty epic collapse to just not make the playoffs. Like, right. Boston right now is 9 games over 500. They're the third wild card. The Yankees are 18 games over 500. Like, there would have to be a pretty large collapse for right. them to not make the playoffs. And also, like, the third wild card. Like, I don't see it. Like, I think they're better than the Twins. I still think they're better than the Red Sox, even though the Red Sox, you know, have beat them twice. I don't see it. And then with Soto, like, Hal himself has made it pretty clear that they are going to try their best to re-sign Soto. I can't see them letting him walk. Also, the front office and ownership have shown sometimes a willingness to cater to what the fan base wants. I mean, DJ is a good example of that.
Yeah.
And if they let Soto go, Soto can leave. I'm not like, it could be his choice that he doesn't want to be with the Yankees long-term. He wants to go play elsewhere. You know, obviously that's his decision, but from what they have said publicly, what they traded, like, it seems like they want to make him a Yankee for life. So I still can't see that, even if they were to not make the playoffs or flame out early in the playoffs or whatever it might be. Like, I still think their number one priority this offseason is to sign Soto long term. They are very well aware that the fan base will revolt if they don't try. Now, again, Soto could leave on his own accord, but if they don't try, there will be a big revolt from the fan base. There will be an uprising within the fan base if they don't try.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And I mean, if they are their third wild card with Soto, I mean, imagine them without Soto then. I mean, that means you have to keep Soto around. I mean, a world without Juan Soto, you know, if you end up being a third wild card, which I agree, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, what are you without Juan Soto? How do you even begin to replace him? So, I mean, either way, I think they need to sign him. I think it's very obvious why. I think they have a great chance of re-signing him. So I don't really think that factors into that decision. Also, I just want to remind people, and we said it a couple times, I know it's bad right now, but like, the Yankees will probably make moves. How many moves? I don't know what the moves are. I don't know that either, but I feel confident that when the trade deadline passes, this roster will look different in one or two areas. Like, I firmly believe that. I don't know how they're going to do it, because, you know, we're still in the phase of people still thinking that they might be in it. They might have a chance. But as we get closer to that deadline, teams are going to make decisions. And I think more people will be available than they are right now. So I firmly believe that this team and this organization is going to make moves, and this will be an improved roster after the deadline. So it's not good right now. We've talked about it for a while now. It doesn't look good, but I also think that this will not be the same team when August comes around. And I think that they will do everything they can to improve it, because they know that they're one of the better teams in the league. They know that they have a chance to win the World Series. And if they believe that this is a blip, then this shouldn't be discouraging them from trying to improve the team. And I still believe pretty strongly that they will.
Yes, and that also factors into the Soto equation of this too. Like, you have him for only 1 year guaranteed. You need to improve the roster to try and win the World Series while you have someone of his stature for 1 year. Like, it's not a given that the Yankees are going to sign him in free agency. So you have to maximize this year to the best of your abilities. And I would be shocked if they didn't at the trade deadline. Like, the needs are obvious. Now, obviously, with there not being many teams selling, like, that certainly makes things difficult. But the Yankees, honestly, frankly, have no choice but to improve the roster.
I agree.
They have no choice. So, yes, the prices are probably going to be high, but you have to do it because of what I just said. You have Soto for 1 year guaranteed, and you have to maximize this year to the best of your abilities.
I agree. I have nothing else to add. So thank you everyone for your questions. We appreciate the enthusiasm and the interest, and also appreciate that you guys value our opinions enough to ask us these things. So thank you very much. Thank you for supporting us. We're going a little bit long, so we're going to wrap it up here. Chris, any final thoughts as we head into the final week of the first half before the All-Star break?
I mean, it's a big week for the Yankees. Like it does feel like a continuation of what's been happening for these past few weeks. Like there's a great opportunity in front of them to quiet the noise with facing the Rays and the Orioles. Like if they take two of three this weekend against the Orioles and head into the All-Star break, like it just feels like it's a different vibe, like going into a break after, you know, taking two of three on the road against Baltimore. Or if they get swept, like it just lingers for like the next week until they're back home against Tampa on the 19th. Like it's a big week to at least try and right the ship a little bit. So I'm interested to see which direction they go.
Yeah, this is a crucial week in their season, I think. This is a big week. Not just the opponent, but like you said, that All-Star break could either be really good or could be horrible for everyone if they don't play well. So, yeah, I think it's a crucial week, and hopefully something positive comes out of it. Hopefully this day off helps them reset, and going on the road will help them a little bit. So thank you to everybody for listening. We appreciate it. We appreciate the support. You can find us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. You can also find us on YouTube under the same channel name. Please subscribe. Please spread the word. We appreciate all the support. And I don't think we're going to do a live stream this week. So we will speak to you all next week.